that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, Anderson McQuaid Architectural Moldings, Cleveland Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hello, everybody. This is Dan Shaughnessy filling in for Tony Maz on the Baseball Reporters. I'll be here for the next hour taking your calls at 617-779-0985. Tim McCone is running sidecar with me today, talking baseball. And Tim, for starters, how old are you?
28.
Okay, so you know nothing about Don Baylor, which I have to, you know, Felge knows things about Don Baylor, but chooses not to get into them because it happened before yesterday. And, you know, on this station, nothing that happened before yesterday matters. It's all about now and the future, and we're young and moving forward, the whole thing. Too bad. You're going to have to hear about Don Baylor at this moment. Poor Don Baylor. He died today at 68, a multiple myeloma, I believe. And people need to know. I understand nobody wants to hear the old-time baseball stuff, but if you are, I guess you got to be a certain age on this. The 86 team was a pretty magical team. They had been flat for several years. People were losing interest. This was 11 years after the 75 World Series, and things had kind of gotten boring here. They had a boring team, boring manager, all that stuff. They were flat 81-81 in 1985, basically no hopes for 86. And along comes the team that, really, they took them to the seventh game of the World Series. Yes, Felge, they did not win. This was the Bill Buckner year. They went all the way to the finish and had an excruciating ending. But that season was propelled in many ways by Don Baylor, who had come to the big leagues in 1971. He was one of these AAA guys. In the old days, AAA guys used to linger there because there was so much talent in the big leagues, you couldn't fight your way out. Now the Sox regularly promote 20-year-old guys, guys from AA, guys who played 80 games over single A, and you're in the big leagues if you have a shred of talent and ability to hit pitching. In the old days, Don Baylor, he hit like the triple crown of AAA and could not make the big league roster because the Orioles were then winning 109, 108 games every year. They were stacked. Couldn't make the team. Finally, he makes the team, and he does it all. He goes to several teams. In 1979, he drove in 139 runs. He was American League MVP. He got hit by more pitches, I believe, than anyone in the history of baseball. He was from Texas, and he was a clubhouse guy. He was a Kangaroo Court guy. He was a clubhouse leader. And on Easter Sunday, 1986, the Sox struck a deal with the Yankees. They used to, in fact, do deals with the Yankees, and this was a major deal. Mike Easler, one of the Sox better hitters, for Don Baylor. Easler was a Pentecostal minister. He was traded on Easter Sunday to the Yanks, and Baylor came this way. Immediately became their DH. Jim Rice was still playing left field in those days. And I think he finished in the top 10 in the MVP voting that year. Clemens was MVP. He was 24-4, came out of, you know, back from an injury. He did great. Rice was third in the balloting that year. But Baylor was the clubhouse presence, the leader. I think he got hit by, I don't know, more than 25 pitches that year. Led the American League in that again. Had the Kangaroo Court. Really just put a backbone in this team of kind of a boring, spineless, not a real aggressive team. All of a sudden, they had stand-up guys, and they were winning, and they were good. And then in the playoffs, they were about to be extinguished. They were down 5-2 in the top of the ninth inning in Anaheim, trailing the series 3-1. So it's over. It's the ALCS, and they're going to go down. All the Angels are on the top step of the dugout. Gene Mock, who had never been to a World Series, was ready to finally get there. Reggie Jackson was there. All the great Angels. And Don Baylor stepped up when they were Sox were trailing 5-2 in the ninth, about to go away, and hit a two-run homer to make it 5-4. Subsequently, Dave Henderson hit a two-run homer, and the Sox end up winning that game in extra innings. That was Don Baylor. His time in Boston should not be forgotten. Died today at the age of 68, and I hope I have I brought you up to speed on this, young Mr. Tim McCone?
Yeah, no, for sure.
I know it's a lot of information. Sorry to burden you with that. And we have a caller who actually wants to talk about Don Baylor. Am I correct? Is there a guy on the line who wants to talk about Don Baylor? You're next.
Yes, it's Tender in Providence.
Tender in Providence, you are next on 98.5 The Sports Hub, The Baseball Reporters.
It's an honor, Dan.
How did I do?
You did excellent.
I know you.
I'm 65 in November, and I've been a Red Sox fan my whole life. And when I heard Don passed away today, I started thinking about, know, the type of ball player he was, the type of person he was. And I tried to think of a Red Sox player in today's lineup that would be anything close to him. He was the type of guy that would take one for the team. I mean, he constantly would lean into fastballs just to get on base when we really needed, you know, to get somebody on base. And not to mention he was a good hitter, too. The guy was, I think you even said he was MVP one year.
Yeah, he hit 350 home runs in the big leagues, and yes, knocked in 139 runs in his MVP season.
You know, and we hear a lot, you know, I listen to Felger and Maz mostly in the daytime, and they talk about the lack of leadership and stuff, and you know, that's not something you can step up to the mic and say, hey, I'm the leader. That's all done through action. You know, your actions speak louder than your words still. And there's no doubt that Don Baylor was a leader. He may not have been the primary leader, but there was no doubt in anybody's mind that he was a leader. And I don't see a lot of that. I think this generation, I hate to say it, but I think they're soft. And so I appreciate you giving me the time.
Tender.
I have a lot of good memories of him.
Well, you've done a good job sticking up for our guy here. This is good old guy radio, and we appreciate you calling in. We have someone else, Chris from Plainville, also wants to talk about Don Baylor. God bless you. What do you got?
Dan, I tell you, I appreciate the 86 Sox for a whole bunch of different reasons. They were the first team since I was a young boy that actually just they were better. They were good. They were really good, and I'll never forget, I was a senior in high school, and I was sitting with my buddy saying, we'll never forget this night, one strike away. Little did I know, for all the wrong reasons.
Yes.
But it was a phenomenal team. It had a combination of young and older guys, and Don Baylor totally embodied what was good about that team. And it's a shame that he passed too early. And I think what the younger kids of this generation need to understand is that it wasn't all, you know, great things when we were younger. I mean, the Red Sox were not that great.
Thank you.
And when you had a great team, you really needed to appreciate it, even if they let you down. But see, that's kind of what made it special. You come back. And anyways, I know that's like old school, but that's it.
Well, you did a good job, and we'll take one more call on Don Baylor before we get to the new century and today's Red Sox, and are you buying in on the White Sox weekend, and what's your playoff rotation? We are going to get to all that. And before we do, Dan from Cranston, you're next on Don Baylor.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good, Dan. How are you?
Good. You were the right guy at the right spot.
There you go.
On the show. Appreciate it. You know, all I could think about is if Don Baylor was playing today and he was on the plane when David Price did his infamous thing on Eck. You know, if they had a guy like that in the Red Sox, you know what he'd do? He'd say, sit down and shut the F up, right?
That is correct. That would not have
happened. Grab him by the throat and just say, shut up. And that's the difference. There's no one around nowadays that can do that. I do miss guys like that.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks for checking in on that thought. And again, it's I know that nobody wants to hear it here, but there was baseball before 2017.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserati, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, God, it kills me to say these things about him. Okay, Jared Carrabas, who's nice enough to check in from New York City with his new gig. Jared, how are you?
What's going on, Dan? Why don't you want to call me the guy? I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
I'm just the guy.
Just the guy. Hey, for those who may not know, could you explain your circumstances and situation, what the deal is with New York and what your gig is?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been saying for months, if not almost a couple of years, I wasn't going to come to New York, but we've got a new MLB podcast/Facebook show called Starting Nine. It's me and Dallas Braden, and you know, the nightly show, it's going to be like 20 minutes, but we're going to talk about all the top stories in baseball that day, and then the podcast, we're going to be having guests on. The first episode came out on iTunes last Thursday. We had Brian Wilson on, who I didn't even know was still around. He apparently is, and that was a really interesting interview. So we're going to have fun with it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Of course, last night, I mean, one of the great indignities of my career was filling in for Jerry Karabas on the baseball show on Comcast, which was one of the more ass-backwards situations, that the notion that I was filling in for you. But, in fact, it did happen. You checked in with our show on that thing last night. Good job. The chair's still warm for you. And meanwhile, can I get you to comment a little bit about, are you buying in on these Red Sox and what just happened and what's going to happen moving forward?
I don't know if buying in is, I think it's too strong right now, because I'm looking at, you know, this is their second six-game winning streak of the year, and they went 8-14 after the last one. And I'm still looking at, you know, what they've done over that span, and including this current six-game winning streak. And there are a lot of guys that are still very cold right now. Bogarts, Mitch Moreland, Benintendi, JBJ, Mookie Betts. A lot of these guys have still yet to get it going. And I wrote about this today on your favorite website, BarstoolSports.com.
Oh, yeah.
And, and one of the points that I was making was, yes, it's nice to see them sort of turn it around here and get going on a winning basis, but they can't depend on guys like Chris Young and Eduardo Nunez over the next 2 months to sort of lead the charge into October. So, yes, it's nice to see them performing as well as they have and winning baseball games, but you know, you're going to need those guys to wake up, and especially guys like Hanley Ramirez now has the oblique, and Mitch Moreland with the toe, and Bogarts with the hand, and Pedroia with the knee. So, I don't know. I feel like you, Dan. I'm taking a negative approach when the team is on a six-game winning streak. It's very disheartening.
Yeah, if you want another niggy there, point out that they're 21-22 in their own division, which is not exactly strong this year. It is balanced, I guess you could say. But three of the teams have a better record against them in head-to-head play, everyone except Toronto in the division. What would be the Jared Karabas power rankings in the American League?
I would say it's obviously Houston number one. I would say probably Cleveland number two. I know the record says otherwise, but Cleveland, I like them a lot. And then the Red Sox, they certainly have their flaws because, like I said, you know, the offense has underperformed all year. They have yet to really get it going. And as we are approaching mid-August, it's sort of, you know, how long are you going to give this team before we just say that they kind of are what they are offensively? And I'm not really at that point yet, because I know that a lot of those names that I mentioned before, you know, mainly Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is substantially better than how he's performed this year. He hasn't been bad, but sure, he hasn't been MVP runner-up good yet. I'm sort of waiting on that, because Cleveland, I think, is the more well-rounded team right now, so I would definitely put them ahead of the Red Sox, at least from a power ranking standpoint.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was talking to Lou, and I were talking on the show last night a little bit, and we both sort of think Houston, I'm not sure they're built for the playoffs. I like Cleveland best in the American League, and as you say, the record doesn't reflect that, but you know, they've been there, they've got some, you know, major power arms in that bullpen, and I just like their everyday lineup better. Anyway, that said, have you lined up your playoff rotation? What order would you go in right now if you this team in the playoffs? Would you go with three or four, and who would you pitch?
It depends on the length of the series. In a seven-game series?
Well, let's let's say seven.
Yeah, in a seven-game series, you know, you obviously have Chris Sale number one, and this is, I never in a million years thought that I would say this and be serious when I said it. Drew Pomeranz would have to be your number two, right? Like, he would have to be.
Words no one would ever utter. Would have
right
to be.
He would have to be your number two. This is a guy that didn't even get a postseason start last year. They stuck him out in the bullpen. I was ready to stick him in the bullpen to start this year, too, which isn't really the worst thing. I mean, I think he sort of fits that profile of he could be the power lefty that can go multiple innings, but he's been great for them since about mid-May. I would have him as my number two. And then assuming David Price is healthy, which we can't really factor in, but I would have David Price number three. And then, you know, you'd have Rick Porcello as your number four, who might not even get more than one start in that series, or he might come out of the bullpen in Game 7 or something.
Yeah, that's a weird thought right there. Okay, while we're doing these questions and answers with Jared Karabas, nice enough to call in from New York. Okay, what is more sustainable, Nunez or Devers?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would probably say Nunez, because he's what, 30 years old, former All-Star. The league can make adjustments to him, and I don't think it's going to be as difficult for a 20-year-old kid you know, who's got, what, 11 games at the big leagues. Like, you know, if the league starts to figure him out, it might be a little more difficult. And Nunez, yeah, he's hitting 400 since he got to Boston, but he can be a 300 hitter at the major league level. You know, Devers could sort of hit a bump in the road here, and I think that should be expected at some point. I don't think he's going to hit 385 for the rest of the year. So I think both of these guys are going to come back down to earth at some point. But Nunez, obviously being the veteran and a former All-Star in this league, you would expect him to come out of it, I guess, more smoothly.
Well, while we're on the subject of Nunez, and I know you've been having some, you know, Twitter wars over my guy, Pablo Sandoval, have you been tracking him? Did he not have a double in his first game that triggered their winning rally?
Yeah, he had a double, but I think he was like 0-for-3 before that and had a throwing error. So, you know, not new city, but same old Pablo.
No piling on that thing. Let me ask you about the bullpen. Do you think that the deadline deal addition solves it? And what is your, let's say Pomerantz fizzles out in the sixth inning. We'll give him the sixth inning. What's your order after that?
So I found the order in which John Farrell used his bullpen the other night to be pretty interesting when he went with Reed in the seventh, and then he had Barnes in there. I think Matt Barnes is probably a guy that they're trying to get right because, you know, he's been pitching pretty well aside from that Kansas City appearance where I think he walked the first two guys that he faced and got the hook. So I think that they're sort of grooming Matt Barnes to get acclimated to more high-leverage situations. And the same thing with Joe Kelly when he comes back. And I think, is he eligible to come back? Is he back?
Joe Kelly is officially back, yes.
Okay, yeah, because I saw him like golfing today. I was like, oh, that looks weird for a guy with a hamstring injury.
Joey Kittens.
Nothing's weird with him.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's how I would probably set it up, is some combination of Joe Kelly or Matt Barnes in the seventh, and then you'd have Reed for the eighth and Kimbrell in the ninth. You know, I'm fine with using Reed in the seventh inning the other night as a means to sort of, because you know that he can pitch in the eighth inning. You already know that. And you know that he can pitch the ninth too. So if that was an opportunity to get Matt Barnes more experience in the eighth inning, then so be it, because that's only going to help them in the long run.
All right, Jared Carrabas, nice enough to call in. Before we cut you loose, and we are going to do that, I promise, are you aware that the Dodgers are 43-7 since the cooler, Adrian Gonzalez, was disabled?
Yeah, I am aware of that, and that's also the best 50-game stretch in the last 105 years. I would ask you what it was like to watch the last team that did that 105 years ago, but I won't do that. I won't date you that bad, Dan. But for the most part, the Dodgers, what they're doing, pretty scary stuff, and it's going to be interesting to see a team that's just going to moonwalk to the finish line here, what they're going to be like come the postseason. Because if they're not going to play a meaningful game over the last 2 months, how do you just turn that back on come October? So I'm interested to see how that goes.
It's fascinating what's going on out there. So Jared Carrabas does not just do the Red Sox. He's every man, every baseball story. Got these new gigs, which he already identified for us. We appreciate you checking in from New York City.
All right, thanks, Dan.
Thanks, man. Okay, Dan Shaughnessy filling in for Tony Mazz on the Baseball Reporters. The number here is 617-779-0985. We're going to go to a break, then we'll come back and plow through some of your calls, and then we'll talk to Alex Speer, the great Alex Speer of the Boston Globe.
The Baseball Reporters, Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm going to plow through a few of your calls, and then we'll talk to the great Alex Speer. Angelo from Methuen, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Shaughnessy.
Pleasure to talk to you, Angelo.
Before I get to Farrell, the series against the White Sox was one big joke.
I know.
One big joke.
Yep.
Okay, to Farrell, right?
Yep.
I don't know if I could. To me, he's a complete ass. You know why?
Why?
He's got two pets he's always given reds to. Vet and Benintendi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And number two, Bradley hasn't had a day off since he was off a couple of days way back when he had that knee injury, right?
Right.
I could see it. His bat speed is a little under the radar.
He's easy to strike out.
Why don't they give him a few days off?
Well, they like the defense, obviously. Those are good questions. We will pose them to John Farrell next time we have a chance. Angelo, thank you so much for checking in. Chris from Connecticut, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hello.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
My question is for you. It's about the article you wrote about Dennis Eckersley and pressure situation.
Mm-hmm.
What was the point in including the Jackie Bradley tweeting the photo, but then you left out the fact that they worked out the situation the same night?
Well, I left out the fact that...
kind of back on normal terms.
Yeah, Chris, I left that fact out because I checked with Dennis Eckersley, and that is not his version of events. The situation was not worked out. There was no apology delivered, and in Dennis's view, it was not worked out. So I did fact check that, and that's the reason you didn't see that represented, but we appreciate you asking. Was there anything else you wanted to know about that? Evidently not. Thanks for checking in with your question. Joe from Hingham, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hey, Shaughnessy, big fan. I wanted to get your take on, you know, what's going to happen when Dustin Pedroia comes back. Like, I have a couple of theories. They could move Nunez over to short, sit Bogarts, move Devers to DH, sit Hadley, move Hadley to first, sit Moreland. So I just wanted to get your take on that.
No, those are all good. I mean, it's nice to have the flexibility. Hanley's physical status is going to have something to do with this, the shoulders, the oblique, whatever's going on. There was some dialogue going on there where you'd say, you got to DL this guy. But with Hanley, it's a little bit like Manny in the old days. Unfortunately, you're not getting the production out of Hanley that you got out of Manly. His RBI total is really thin for a guy who's, you know, hired to do what he does. He's been a 250 hitter and really not knocking in the run. So we thought he was going to turn the corner and get hot. It hasn't happened. But all those things come into play when you talk about Pedroia coming back, Nunez, Devers, the DH, Hanley, Chris Young having the big day. And that's the manager's job, to move guys around, play the hot hand, and rotate your lineup. And, of course, a lot of it has to do with the matchups against that day's pitcher. So you're going to see some fluidity to their thing. It's not going to be a set lineup rotation every day. You're just not going to have that kind of dependency on the lineup. We appreciate that call. We still have some folks, and God bless you out there, who want to talk about the great Don Baylor, who passed away today at the age of 68. Dave from Abington, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hi, Dan. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I've been listening pretty much from start to finish, but I don't know if you mentioned it, because I think... is he the only guy to play in a World Series 3 years in a row for three different teams?
Oh, yeah, the Twins, the Red Sox, and...
the A's.
Oh, that's very good. Well, there's more likelihood of happening now, I suppose, but that's a rare feat.
Around.
Yeah, that's a rare feat. I'll tell
Can
you something else.
One other thing real quick?
Please do.
You mentioned Adrian Gonzalez a minute ago.
The cooler.
And how... yeah. Do you remember a couple of years ago, one of the sports networks... they were hyping that Liverpool team that John Henry owns.
Okay.
They showed that thing where they played that friendly exhibition game at Fenway.
Yep.
And they had a complete phony kind of meet and greet thing where those guys from Liverpool came into the locker room and the Red Sox were all standing around saying hi. They show Adrian Gonzalez on that episode talking to one of the Spanish players on that team. They're showing the subtitles. Adrian Gonzalez has the Red Sox schedule in his hand. The guy he's talking to is like a reserve midfielder.
Sure.
The kid is making like, you know, maybe a million
sure.
American a year. And he's saying to the guy, he's like, look, we get like 3 days, 4 days off a month.
Yeah.
And he's making like $22 million a year, and the kids just look at him.
Yeah, he was a beauty. You know, one of the things Gonzalez did, he brought Carlos Slim into the clubhouse because Adrian Gonzalez's uncle was a security guard for Carlos Slim, who at the time was the wealthiest man in the world. It was, you know, north of $800 billion, whatever it was. And he was ahead of Gates and all those guys. And I never saw security people with a clubhouse guest who were packing. These guys were carrying weapons because Carlos Slim had to have bodyguards everywhere he went because he was the world's richest man at that time. And Gonzo's uncle was a guy with him. Carlos Slim, big baseball fan. One other thing on Don Baylor, which we're going to take one more call on Donnie Baylor. Don Baylor was playing first base on April 29th, 1986, the night that Roger Clemens first struck out 20 batters and walked zero. It was against the Seattle Mariners on a weeknight when everybody was down at the Celtic game because Larry Bird and Dominique were going at it down the street. But Baylor dropped a pop-up in that game. It was a foul territory pop-up. He was kind of like an Ortiz, didn't play there a lot, and didn't expect a lot. It was fairly early in the game. I don't know who hit it. The batter ended up striking out. But if Baylor doesn't drop the pop-up, you got a 19-strikeout game, which would not have been quite as historic as it turned out being. Louis from Amesbury, you are next on the Baseball Reporters with Shaughnessy filling in for Mass.
Hey, Dan, thanks for taking my call. I love listening to you. I don't agree with you all the time, but I love your knowledge of sports and the Red Sox. Hey, I got to tell you, Don Baylor, rest in peace, Don, but he plays an important role in my life. I was at that game when he hit the home run, and then Henderson came up, and we got cheap center field bleacher seats. And beyond that, 1986, October 25th, 1986, the day I got married, ground ball down the first base. It's my wedding. I just got married. The ball goes between Buckner's legs. Everybody in the wedding looks at me and says, "You sure you want to do this?"
Oh,
so Don Baylor, again, rest in peace. I remember, talk about a presence in the clubhouse.
Yes.
He wouldn't put up with some of the BS that they're putting up with right now. He definitely was a great presence in the lineup, and he's going to be missed.
Well, there is truth to that. Louis from Amesbury, we appreciate one last tribute to Don Baylor. We have had a lot of that tonight. Thank God I'm in the chair. Actually, Maz could give some props. He's old enough to know how important Don Baylor was in Red Sox history, how important he was in really throughout baseball. I mean, he had so much presence and was so well-regarded. He managed. He worked in Chicago. As we talked about, he was on the Twins team that won it in 87. The Oriole team where he came up, just, you know, the Yankees, Steinbrenner traded him to the Red Sox in 1986. So just touched a lot of bases in his time. And young Tim McCone, do you feel that you're up to speed on Don Baylor now?
Yeah, no, yeah, it was so a good history lesson right there. I like
to
that.
To go forward and do that. And I have to ask you, since I ask all the young guys, are you buying in on the Red Sox based on what you saw against the White Sox this weekend?
I'm not right now. I'm just not a bit. I don't think the White Sox are very good at all.
Thank you.
So I think this next couple of weeks where the schedule gets tough for them, you're really going to learn a lot about the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, and I hate to point out the Niggies, but they are 21-22 in their own division. The schedule gets a little bit tougher now. Tampa has won more against... Tampa is above 500 against the Sox. They have won the season series thus far. Sox got to go there for two. Then they go to New York. They have won the series and series thus far against the Red Sox. They have three there. Sox come home with one game against Cleveland. And Cleveland's got to be a little bit embarrassed about coming in here and, you know, losing two straight, yeah. not getting anything done. That hideous loss they had, the 12-10 game, which many think turned the Red Sox season around. So they come in here Monday. Then the Cardinals come in. The Cardinals are having an off year for sure. It's unusual to see them looking up at 500. They are 55-56. But I expect them to come in here and be representative, to play tough and do a little bit better. A lot of folks right now, let me ask you, Tim McCone, what is your playoff rotation? Come on.
Yeah, obviously you go Sale. I like Pomerantz, Porcello probably. And then...
How about David Price, man?
I mean, I guess because you're paying more than $200 million, you have to throw him in there. But I'm not feeling super confident about it. What about you?
Well, that's kind of harsh on David Price, and I have to defend him once again. next on the Baseball Reporters, we have the great Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, who I believe is in the checkout line at the supermarket.
I've now cleared it, Dan. I've now cleared it. Update.
Excellent. Thank you so much for checking in, Alex. First of all, when's the last time you were saw the Red Sox? What games did you do on the homestand?
I was at everyone up through Friday, and
okay.
then I was engaged in the Sabre seminar over the weekend.
Oh, I wish I had been at that. My head would have exploded. Thanks very much for saying hello to all my friends there. Hey, yeah. the new guy's booked. Do you know that guy?
I'm sorry, which
there's a book out about who should be in the Hall of Fame. Is it Jaffe?
Oh, Jay Jaffe. He's awesome.
He's a great guy, right?
He's fantastic, and he's pretty brilliant, and the Globe has benefited from his work over the years.
Yeah, I talked to Pete Abraham, who also loves him, and I may have lumped him in with, you know, some of the guys that are less friendly or likable. But have you talked to him about having Sandy Koufax ranked as the 77th best starting pitcher ever?
This I have not. I haven't talked to him since the release of the new book, but I think that, you know, one of the interesting things about the Hall of Fame is that we recognize greatness in both. It recognizes greatness both in short bursts and sustained excellence. So, you know, the Craig Biggio kind of, you know, people weren't buying tickets to see Craig Biggio, but the guy was an amazing player because he was able to sustain elite performance over the course of a couple decades.
Sure.
Sandy Koufax didn't do that. You know, he had as compelling a you know, a 6 to 7 year window as baseball has ever seen, but didn't sustain it beyond that.
No, I understand that. I should probably be nicer to the guy. I did say it's a very intriguing book, and I think that folks who want to get out there, and from what I'm told, it's a good read, and it's a, regarding who should be in the Hall of Fame, who should turn in their keys, and this kind of thing, and that's the kind of thing we should probably give some respect to. Alex Beer checking in from the Boston Globe. Alex, since you were at that most of that homestand, where do you rank the Tuesday 12-10 game? Is that possibly the best baseball game of the year throughout all of Major League Baseball?
It's right up there. I mean, it's hard to say throughout all of Major League Baseball because I don't watch every game across Major League Baseball, but easily the most entertaining of the Red Sox games. It was kind of reminiscent of games that we used to see in like 2003, 2004, when there was an offense that was bananas that blew a bunch of, and their bullpens were terrible back then, so they would always blow a bunch of leads and then come back and retake them and sometimes hold on to them and sometimes lose them. It was the kind of pinball dynamic that you so rarely see, that was filled with just, you know, element after element of the unexpected. That one was great. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, the number of good pitchers who were roughed up in that game, you know, both starters, you know, stud guys, Andrew Miller, Kimbrell gave it up, as we know. It was just extraordinary. And, you know, they had the great catch by their guy into the bullpen. The walk-off.
The Al Luplow caliber catch, by the way.
See, again.
I'm not sure how many people have emailed you about Al Luplow in the past 5 days. I've literally received dozens of emails about the great Al Luplow catch of 1963 in the aftermath of that Austin Jackson catch.
Well, and I am one of the few people, I was actually listening to the radio when that catch was made, and the ball was hit by Dick Williams, who became part of Red Sox folklore. He was pinch hitting for the Red Sox in the late innings of that game, and all we had was a radio call. There's no footage of a catch. Who knows? But that was quite a thing. Now, since I have you on the air, Alex Speer, I have to get your American League power rankings. Give me your top, I don't know, 3, 4, 5.
I think that Houston is a no-brainer. I think that the Indians, are probably occupy the next position so long as Andrew Miller is able to come back pretty healthy from this little dip. Although I do give one caveat there, which is teams that make it all the way through October have pitching staffs that are a mess the following year. So there's certainly a chance that they could have a precipitous decline down the stretch. Just as the Cubs have had one basically had one throughout the first half. And then I put the Red Sox and the Yankees neck and neck. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, it really surprises me that the Yankees are in second place at this point. They've outscored the heck out of their opponents. Their run differential is phenomenal at this point. It's, I think, third best in baseball behind only the Astros, the Dodgers, of course, and the Astros. They score a ton at times, although they've gone into a little bit of a collective slide in recent weeks. They're starting pitching. Their entire rotation has had an ERA throughout most of the year that's been just about right at where the Red Sox is. The big separator has been the bullpen for much of the year. Their bullpen is now better, but they're a weird team. They lose a lot to bad teams. They beat up on good teams. This is one of the most puzzling, really good teams I've seen since like the 2002 Red Sox. So I think that on a talent basis, I put the Red Sox and Yankees right next to each other. And I really don't have much separation between them, save for the fact that the Red Sox are 3 games ahead of them in the standings.
And where are you going to go with the National League on the Dodgers? I mean, sometimes we had that Mariner team that won all those games and didn't get off the ground. What percentage would you put on the Dodgers being in the World Series? And if not, who's going to stop them?
I mean, it's going to be an awesome National League playoff,
yes.
I think, because the Nationals are fantastic. Mm-hmm. They're talked about by no one, but their lineup is their lineup is absolutely stacked with stars. Plus, they have those, you know, Scherzer and Strasburg guys at the top of the rotation if Strasburg ever gets to pitch in October. The Cubs are a pretty formidable, deep team. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the Dodgers getting knocked out early. Let's not forget that the Cubs, but for like some great fortune visited upon them in Game 4 of the NLDS, they were, you know, there were a lot of people around the Cubs who were scared that they were going to lose that division series. So sure. I would say that I would give the Dodgers, honestly, roughly like a 45% chance of reaching the World Series, and perhaps giving a 25% chance to the Nationals and a 20% chance to the Cubs.
Okay.
Well, 15% chance to the Cubs, 5% to the field.
That's fair. We're talking to Alex Beer of the Boston Globe, and while I have him on the spot, I'm going to put his feet to the fire on these things. So that being done, all right, Red Sox are in the first round of the playoffs, and that's not a seven-game series. What is your playoff rotation in a five-game series for the Red Sox?
So we're going just in a theoretical vacuum in which it doesn't matter how a team does against righties and lefties and that
yeah,
sort of good stuff.
I like it. Theoretical vacuum.
I think that you probably go with Sale, followed by Pomerantz, and then you have Porcello for game three because Porcello gives reliable innings, which I think matters for setting up the rest of the series. And then I guess you can have a coin flip for Price versus Porcello in games three versus four, depending upon health of Price. I mean, honestly, would you be shocked at this point, Dan, if we didn't see David Price pitch again this year?
I would be. I mean, I just, you know, why did he tell us it was one on a scale of 10? And then there's the notion now that he might not be coming back. I mean, if that's the case, we could stretch this forward. You and I talked about this a week ago. He could never pitch for the Red Sox again. I know most guys aren't going to opt out with that kind of dough on the table and not pitching next year.
Tommy John.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, it just seems draconian to suggest that. But I ask you, in your scenario, if he's your game four guy, are you going to give him the ball down 2-1 with all the other stuff that's gone on?
The answer is yes. But you would be prepared to make, you know, to make a move to the bullpen pretty quickly. Now, with Price, I don't want to be alarmist, but I just think that when you see delays in the course of, you know, in the course of comebacks from arm issues, then you wonder how conservative a course the team is going to follow. There have been no indications, as best as I can tell, that there's a legitimate Tommy John possibility hanging over him by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, you just wonder the longer that that kind of the progressive steps, you know, the progressive steps take to hit. But my likelihood is that he's pitching in September, and then you can make some kind of an assessment. But yes, in answer to your question, I would trust him to go to the mound, and then but you would have a kind of quick trigger on figuring it out as a bullpen game if necessary.
All right, last thing before we let you go, this is a 10-second answer. What is more sustainable, Nunez or Devers?
I'd go Nunez for the time being, just the experience factor.
Okay, well done. Alex Beer from the Boston Globe, thank you so much for checking in. We will talk to you again soon, maybe even tomorrow.
Sounds great, Dan.
See you, man. This is Shaughnessy, filling in for Maz on the Baseball Reporters, where we have had a rocking hour here.
Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.